It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Parents want what is best for their kids, and sometimes that desire can lead to some extreme behavior, micromanaging a child's education, extracurriculars, and even their social life. Sociologist Laura Hamilton set out to study the impact of so-called helicopter parents on their child's college experience and success in later life, and we'll talk about what she found in just a few minutes. But first, we decided to go out and ask some parents and students what they think about helicopter parents. Antoine Jocks immediately self-identified as a helicopter parent.
I just consider it as being concerned. It's a difference than hovering over and being concerned. So I wouldn't specify that as being a helicopter parent.
I remember being in class in high school, and there was this kid who really didn't study much, and when he ended up getting a bad grade on a test, his dad came in and yelled at the teacher, and it wasn't really her fault. It was kind of shocking that he couldn't take responsibility on his own. Like, it's a parent's job to prepare you for the real world, and it kind of seemed like they were just doing it for them.
We wanted our kids to be independent thinkers and have a lot of self-confidence. And so ever since they were very small, we just did a zillion things to foster that in them. And when they were teenagers, we went, oh my God, we overdid it. But but then they came back, and they're extremely self-confident, independent adults. So
I know what it feels like to be verging on a helicopter parent, but I wanted to be in fairly regular contact, but just in terms of the phone and stuff like that. But it seemed to work out. You know, they gradually grew up, and I gradually grew up with them. So.
Okay, so we were in high school, and one of my friends didn't like the teacher, so she told her parents the reason why she was getting a bad grade was because, like, the teacher hated her.
Okay.
So they went into the class, and the teacher was like, well, the reason why your kid's getting a bad grade is because they're on their phone the whole time and talking, so kind of just, like, backfired, which was kind of funny, but, yeah.
I'm a little bit of a helicopter parent. I'm trying not to be, but I've fallen into that. I probably make sure they get their homework more than anyone did when I was in school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in high school, no one ever cared, or I shouldn't say cared, paid attention to my grades and my homework as much as I try to push them.
My parents were very laissez-faire. They didn't even know I was going to school or skipping school most of the time. So we try to be a bit better with our kids, and especially her mother. She's very, she watches their grades every day.
I am the type of parent, I would say, who hovers occasionally. as she is my only child right now, that I feel like, one, I probably don't have anything else to do, and two, I enjoy being around her and playing with her, and since she is an only kid, she wants to play with me too. But when I know that she's with her cousins and stuff, I'm like, see ya, you know, and she's on her own, totally fine. My sister's got 5 daughters, and I'm one of 9 kids, so I'm not familiar too much with hovering, because that's a lot to hover over. So, I mean, you know, every parent's different, and every kid's different, so those needs are also different. So you can't always say it's wrong or it's right. It's just what's particular to your child.
In addition to Antoine, we talked with Alex from Northwest Iowa, Neil from Iowa City, Chuck from Coralville, Hannah from Chicago, Chris and Graham from Colorado, and Lainey from Iowa City. The sound was collected by IPR production assistant Gray Lanta. And sociologist Laura Hamilton approached the phenomenon of helicopter parenting in a scientific way, and she chose to specifically look at helicopter parenting, or that kind of parenting style, when it comes to college students. The result is the book Parenting to a Degree, How Family Matters for College Women's Success, and she is with me now. Hello, Laura.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today. And I want to talk about definitions here for a little bit, because it was so interesting to listen to the parents in particular that we talked to on the street who sounded a little nervous about the idea that, well, maybe I am a helicopter parent. Maybe I'm doing too much. I think people are worried about being categorized that way. So if you had to define helicopter parent, what is one?
Well, first I want to say it's understandable why people are worried about being defined as a helicopter parent. They have to be one of the most hated figures of 21st century parenting. If you look in the Washington Post and New York Times, they're frequently seen as pesky interlopers who intervene with university programming and test the patience of college officials and create really needy students who boomerang back home after college. In terms of how I define helicopter parents, I actually split helicopters into two different groups. But helicopters were parents that were actively involved in managing their students' college experience. They spoke with their children daily, usually, and they intervened on their behalf for in a number of different realms. There was a group of parents I called professional helicopters whose concern was primarily managing their children's academic and career success. And their focus was getting their kids to become professionals who would eventually be self-supporting. Eventually is the key word there. And the second group were what I called pink helicopters because I was studying women. These were parents who managed primarily the social sphere of their children's experiences. Their goal was for their daughters to gain the kind of sort of social skills, appearance, charm that they would eventually use to marry a mate that would support them. And provide the primary sustenance for the family. So it was two very different pathways to economic success.
And was there something specific that you observed before you started this study that made you think, I need to look into this? I mean, because you approached it, you know, looking at the impact of how this parenting style made a difference in college and beyond. But was there an observation that drew you in?
So this study actually started as part of a larger study that began in 2004, where I followed a group of college women from their beginning of college all the way through college and after. And so in 2004, I'm living on the dormitory floor or have a room on the dormitory floor with my, at that time, my co-author on my first book, Paying for the Party, we were watching these parents and we noticed vast differences in how involved parents were. There were some parents there that were, running off to Target back and forth to get whatever it was their child wanted. They were ordering a rug to fit the exact size of the room. They were there every weekend. And there were other parents that we didn't even see when their children were dropped off. And so immediately I became interested in the role of parents and particularly how that linked to social class and how that might predict how students fared in college. Over time, I began to realize that parents played a really primary role in student success, particularly at this large public flagship state university where there were a lot of ways that students could go wrong. For example, the advisor to student ratios at the school I was studying were really, really high. The advice students were getting wasn't that great. And so students that were getting, who had highly educated parents who were well-resourced were getting sort of extra benefits from people who knew how to help them navigate a college party or talk to a professor or, get additional support for whatever they needed. So I began to become very interested in the differences between kids who had parents that were actively involved and the kids that didn't.
So part of the question was about, is this reinforcing a socioeconomic divide? The idea that getting a college education is a great equalizer, you are questioning whether that actually happens.
Yes, and I'm finding increasingly as the state support for higher education and federal support for higher education is withdrawn, what happens is universities, particularly public universities, they're cash-strapped, and so they need to go somewhere else for support. And you can see that if you even just look at the financial support at public universities, the sort of money they're getting from tuition and fees now rivals, and in many states, is more than what they're getting from state appropriations. So financially, you can see how the burden has shifted to parents. But there's a lot of other ways in which the burden has shifted to families. When you have a school with, 800 students per one advisor, if you're going to get good advice, it's probably not going to be able to come from the advisors who are overworked. So there's a lot of ways in which cash-strapped universities have turned to parents. They've turned to them for recruiting efforts to get more parents and families in there. They've turned to them for advising. They expect parents to help out in course selection. There's an expectation that you will help your children if they have mental health or physical health issues. And so there are a lot of ways in which things that the university might be able to do if there was greater public support for higher education is getting put on families. And when you do that, families with modest means really can't keep up. Parents who have more money and more knowledge of higher education can outfund, out-network, out-strategize everyone. And particularly that transition piece from college to jobs, you can really see this in terms of internships. Families that can afford to pay for internships that are often unpaid and have social connections that can get their children these kind of internships and also can get them jobs, their kids manage to translate their degree into better salaries and more secure employment than kids who do not have that kind of support.
So it's not just parents that are driving this. It's also the way that our universities are changing that is making this kind of helicopter parenting culture maybe more important to a child's success.
Absolutely. You know, in my book, I sort of take a stance, you know, say, wait a minute, let's take a step back from this helicopter blame game. The reasons that parents are doing this are actually quite logical. And also, if you look at even not just what universities are doing, but the environment that their kids are moving into, you know, this is the generation where parents can no longer be certain that a college degree is going to secure their children a spot in the upper middle class or the middle classes. And so the parenting arms race has escalated. Their, you know, student debt is a huge issue. In 1970, you could attend many universities around the country virtually for free. Now the opportunity costs of attending higher education are much higher than they used to be, and the returns aren't necessarily what they used to be when such, you know, such smaller proportion of the population had a degree.
Interesting.
And that, you know, you could get a good job.
Right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking to Laura Hamilton. She's an associate professor of sociology at the University of California, Merced. She's also the author of Parenting to a Degree, How Family Matters for College Women's Success. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about what happens when helicopter parents go to college. We're talking about parental involvement in college students' lives and how that impacts their success both in college and beyond. Laura Hamilton studied just that. She is an associate professor of sociology at the University of California, Merced, and she's the author of Parenting to a Degree, How Family Matters for College Women's Success. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, I'm going to bring Mira Anson into the conversation. She's Director of Academic Support and Retention at the University of Iowa, and she works with parents and students. And Laura, just before the break, we were talking about how the way things have changed in our culture in higher education has also meant that universities are depending on parents more for their involvement in their children's academic careers. But I want to talk a little bit more about some of the observations that you made as you did this long-term study of women in college and how their parents interacted with them. You talked about earlier the professional helicopter parent. Can you give me a concrete example of a professional helicopter parent in action that you observed?
Absolutely. So one of the professional helicopter parents, her daughter had a dental emergency in the first week of college, and like other professional helicopters, this parent was a professor. Many of these are professors, lawyers, doctors, people who are themselves professionals. She was a professor at my university. First week of classes for her, she dropped everything that was going on, canceled her classes, drove to see her daughter in the probably about 3 or 4 hours away, and put her daughter to bed after the dental surgery and started to attend her daughter's classes. She took copious notes to ensure that her daughter would have not missed any minute of class for several days as her daughter recuperated, and then, you know, sat down with her, gave her the information to make sure she caught up, connected with the professors, told them what happened, And then her daughter was safely deposited back in class, and then she went back to her university.
And started her life again, right?
Yes, exactly.
All right, so that's an example of a professional helicopter. You also mentioned pink helicopters, and these are parents who are managing their daughter's social lives as opposed to their academic lives. Give me an example of a pink helicopter parent in action.
Yeah, and so first, you know, briefly, just to mention, pink helicopter parents, they were primarily interested in their daughters having the best years of their life experience. And this is because those experiences become important for relating to other upper middle class and upper class individuals after college. And so one of those experiences that pink helicopter parents wanted their daughters to have was sorority membership. And so there was one of the women was not particularly keen on joining a sorority because, as you know, sometimes kids aren't always interested in what their parents want for them. And so she sort of told her mother that she would rush but didn't sign up for the recruitment process. When her mother found out, she lost it. She was so angry. She said, "Don't you have goals? Why didn't you sign up for this? I'm so angry with you. Why did you not join a sorority? You knew that this was important to me. This was something that you needed to do in college." And there were a number of sort of clashes between parents and daughters over a sorority life. Another woman didn't want to rush, and she asked her mother about this book called Pledge, where they talk about a number of hazing incidents, and she said, "Is this going to happen?" And the mother says, "No." And I, when I was talking to her, I said, "Well, do you know if that's the case?" She's like, "No, it may happen, but that's irrelevant. She needs to join anyway." So there were a number of parents sort of pushing that.
All right. You also have a kind of parenting approach that you call the paramedic parents. And how would you characterize that approach?
So in your earlier sort of excerpt of parents talking, there was at least one parent that sounded like a paramedic to me. Paramedics are parents that offer their children a support net in case they fall or have, you know, some sort of major mistake that needs fixed. But they let their children, they encourage autonomy. They let their children make small mistakes that aren't going to throw them completely off track in the effort to create self-sufficiency during college. So, for example, they would let them perhaps take a class that they think is going to be disastrous because they want their child to realize that on their own. They might let their child manage an interaction with professors. They let their children make decisions about whether or not they want to join Greek life. But when something happens, say, for example, the child gets deeply involved in drugs, and is, you know, at risk of dropping out, they immediately swoop in like a paramedic to fix the situation. And the paramedics were super interesting to me because these are people that were from a wide range of class backgrounds. There were people that were multimillionaires who employed this strategy, and there were people that were working class that also used this strategy. And what sort of linked them together was exposure to a lot of different class backgrounds over their life. So the multimillionaires, most of the time, they grew up on farms, and so they had the knowledge and understanding of importance of autonomy that came from that, but then lots of resources as adults. The working class individuals who were paramedics, they had very little economic resources, but they had some exposure to higher education and the notion that their support could make a difference for their children when they failed in some way.
All right. You also have another category of parent that you call the bystander. What are those parents doing?
So bystanders are a group of parents that, just as the title suggests, are often looking in at their children's experience at college. Bystanders are unable to intervene in the lives of their children during college. Some of them want to. Some of them would desperately like to support and help their children, but they don't know how. They aren't familiar with higher education. They didn't go to college themselves. They often feel a little bit like an outsider, unable to support or help. You know, their daughter has a problem with financial aid or their daughter has a problem with a professor. They're like, "I'm not sure how to help you. I can't." And some bystander parents simply aren't interested in helping. They might have a lot of issues themselves. Financially, they may be way underwater, or they have, multiple jobs, or they're unemployed on the other hand, and they are too sort of busy managing what's going on in their own life to be able to offer the additional support to their kids. So as a whole, it's just a group of parents who are sort of unable to offer that kind of support for their children. And they reasonably expect that, many of them reasonably expect that universities will offer the supports that they cannot offer to their kids. This is, in fact, what many, you know, affluent parents think that elite privates do. It's reasonable that bystander parents would expect that public universities, which are quite a stretch often for kids from low-resource backgrounds, it's reasonable to expect that they might have the kind of services to help their children.
You also wrote of a few examples of parents who really subterfuge their children's college career and academic achievements. Can you give me an example of one of the things that you saw that might fall into that category?
Yeah, and so some of the bystander parents, like I mentioned, were sort of had their own personal struggles, and sometimes they did things that made it even harder for their children. One example was a mother who used her daughter's credit cards to buy a lot of stuff. And then when, you know, the bills came due, it fell on her daughter and her daughter couldn't pay them. And so now her daughter's credit is completely ruined for quite a while. Another parent, when their daughter attempted to apply for various loans on her own, the money went through the house and it was intercepted by the parents, and they took it and wouldn't let her have it. And so she went hungry, effectively. She didn't have money to buy necessities. And so, you know, there were a couple of parents. This isn't very common. There were a couple of parents, though, that definitely made their children's lives at college much more difficult than they would have been otherwise.
And they were exceptions, certainly not typical.
Absolutely.
In your research.
To the rule, yes.
All right,
most bystanders were not like that.
And I want to broaden the conversation out to include experiences of many individuals this hour. You can join the conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me is Laura Hamilton. She's the author of Parenting to a Degree, How Family Matters for College Women's Success. And we'll talk about what you found about how things turned out for the young people that you studied in just a few minutes. But I want to bring Mira Anson into the conversation. She is Director of Academic Support and Retention at the University of Iowa, and she works with parents and students at the University of Iowa. Mira, thank you so much for being here.
Yes, of course. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, and it was interesting listening to what Laura was saying about how culture has changed and universities lean a little bit more on parents than they used to. And you're in an office that is relatively new. It's only been around about, what, 6 years?
I think we're going into about year six.
Okay. Yep. And so tell me why this office was created. What was the need that was seen?
Well, I think there are multiple needs. The University of Iowa has made a lot of great strides in the past several years to target student success. So how can we better support students, individual students, or groups of students? And I will say, too, I've worked at a few different universities in my career in higher ed, but I think the University of Iowa is unique for several reasons, because being such a large institution with such a focus on research and excellence and their role in the state, the University of Iowa does an amazing, very profound, very helpful job in terms of student success. And really there is this culture that has framed a lot of our approaches towards student success that every single student matters. And considering how large the University of Iowa is, especially this fall with the largest first-year student class that the university has had, it's ever more so critical that every student knows that they have a network of support and that they can reach their goals at the University of Iowa if they use their resources and if they practice successful academic behaviors.
So what do you do to help parents figure out how they should be involved in their children's academic career?
Mm-hmm. A lot of that comes down to partnerships that our office has with other campus offices, that we all function together. It's very much so collaborative. You know, I think a good point that was mentioned earlier, that there's an increasing amount of students, it seems oftentimes, but declining state appropriations. So how can we continue to do what we do? And I think a lot of that comes down to partnering with other faculty and staff across campus to say, we all want the same thing. We all want this student to succeed. We all want students to succeed. So our office does partner with a lot of different places. I think specifically, admissions does a wonderful job, and our orientation office does a wonderful job opening up those discussions with parents. Because I think sometimes what can be detrimental is putting up this curtain and say, we can't talk to you. And yes, there is FERPA, which schools must have consent prior to disclosure of academic educational records. But we can still partner with parents and families and have discussions about how we can work together to help their student be successful at Iowa. And knowing, too, that every single student has a different definition of success. So partnering with those groups, and then once the semester starts, we do some things to help new students transition to the University of Iowa. We recently started last academic year a series of parent and family webinars because we were receiving so many parent phone calls, how do I find this resource or what do I do in this situation? So we offer these webinars on the first Friday of the month, August through May, and the webinars, the topics are based on the types of concerns we would see throughout the month. So our office does collect a lot of data and do a lot of research regarding student concerns and student transition. So we thought this is one way to be more proactive to reach out to parents and families so that way they can have the information about financial aid or the information about mental health resources or students with disability resources before that concern might become a crisis.
All right, so parents don't have to reinvent the wheel and try to figure out what they're mm-hmm. doing on their own. You mm-hmm. mentioned getting a lot of phone calls from parents. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more about that. Mm-hmm. What are parents calling you for?
A lot of different reasons. I would say that sometimes the phone calls are basically just academic. So how do I connect my student to a tutor or a campus help lab, and what does that look like? Sometimes the concerns are financial. How do I make up this gap? Or maybe if my child drops a class, what are the impacts on scholarships, things like that. Oftentimes, though, particularly this time of year, they are probably more social, personal-based. So particularly for our first-year students or our new transfer students, the questions oftentimes are, how does my student meet friends? Or my student feels homesick. What can I do to help in this process? Or what is there at the University of Iowa that can help my student? And so we work with the parent on some strategies and try to embrace them as partners in that as well and talk about what they can do. And then we'll also share with them some resources that we can connect the student to help with that particular concern.
Okay. What can a parent do to mm-hmm. help their child make friends? I mean, obviously, Laura has seen this in action, but, I mean, is there a role for a parent in that when your child, and child is a term we're using loosely here because mm-hmm. these are 18-year-olds, mm-hmm. when your student goes off to college?
Absolutely. In terms of making friends and involvement, so what we tell parents and families is that we have identified different areas, different behaviors that lead to student success, whether that be academic, social success. And we talk about what that is. And student involvement is really important. And so we talk to the parent about the different student orgs, and the parent can go and look all of that up as well. But we also have a discussion about what are behaviors that their student can do that we know lead to success, and how can that parent help support those behaviors? Oftentimes we frame it in terms of three R's. The first would be rally, so encouraging their student to practice those healthy behaviors. And we oftentimes can think of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, for example, making sure that their student is in a safe place, making sure that they are eating, making sure that they're exercising, making sure they're going to class. And so we talk about all those different behaviors and then how important it is for the student to support that same message that the University of Iowa is giving that student. But at the same time, we want to recognize that what we know about successful students is a certain level of independence and autonomy. So for a student to email their faculty member in their most difficult course, that's a really big deal, especially for first-year students. And so we talk with parents about how much benefit there is for the student in learning, because the student is here at the University of Iowa to first and foremost to learn. And yes, the degree will come, but we also talk about career goals and how can we connect academic and career planning. What does that look like, and how do we know students are successful within those behaviors? And it almost always comes down to independence and autonomy. And so we share that with a parent, is that our office, the University of Iowa, and the parent and the families, we all have the same goal. We want the students to be successful, not just at the University of Iowa, but in whatever career they choose to go in. And so we talk about what that looks like. So it's this rally piece is the first, are encouraging these successful behaviors that we know from lots and lots of data and decades of research about student development and student transition that lead to student success. We talk about reminding them, that's the second R, reminding them that sometimes our students will be consumed with the day-to-day, and they're going to reach out to their parent when they are the most upset. certainly. But also we tell the family that the University of Iowa is here to support them. Every single student has a network of support, could be their academic advisor, their faculty, our office, the Office of the Dean of Students, University Counseling Service, a lot of great resources to help them, and we're all here for that student. And the third would be reassure. And so we encourage the parents that oftentimes it can be helpful if they empathize with their students' concerns and struggles by using active listening and offering guidance when asked. So I think finding that balance of the paramedic parents, I think was mentioned earlier, can be really helpful. And letting the student know if they fail that first chemistry test, how do you bounce back from that? That doesn't mean you have to leave the institution altogether, or it doesn't mean that you're going to fail here. It means that you too can be successful.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I am talking with Mira Anson, Director of Academic Support and Retention at the University of Iowa, and Laura Hamilton, who's the author of Parenting to a Degree, How Family Matters for College Women's Success. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about helicopter parents and what happens when helicopter parents go to college. My guest, Laura Hamilton, is a sociologist, and she researched this phenomenon, looking at different ways that parents were interacting specifically with daughters in college, did a long-term study about academic success and success in life, and how it related to different parenting techniques. The result is the book Parenting to a Degree, How Family Matters for College Women's Success. Mira Anson is also here with us, Director of Academic Support and Retention at the University of Iowa. And Laura, you were listening to Mira talk about how the University of Iowa interacts with parents and gives them some guidance as they want to help their students succeed. And one of the things that I was hearing maybe between the lines, Mira, is don't intervene with professors on your child's behalf, which is something I have a number of friends who teach at universities, and it's surprising how often they tell me that they hear from the parents of their students. I mean, Laura, is that a phenomenon that you observed, where parents are directly trying to interact with their students' professors to help out their student?
There is definitely a degree to which parents were trying to interact with officials on behalf of their children, and it can backfire. For example, calling housing and yelling and screaming until you get exactly what you want for your child. Or in one case, parents were very unhappy that their daughter was living with a woman who had self-identified as a lesbian, and they called and repeatedly yelled at housing to tell them that this was not acceptable, and housing told them, actually, you know, we're going to stand up for the rights of the student roommate who, you know, your child is going to have to learn to live with someone who is different than them. And this did not necessarily work on their behalf. I do want to say that one thing that Mira has been saying is that the importance of independence and autonomy. There is definitely a difference if you look at the two parenting styles that were most successful in getting their children to be economically secure after college were the helicopters and the paramedics. I should say the professional helicopters and the paramedics. But the paramedics' kids were, by the time they left college, they were self-sufficient, competent, capable of making their own decisions. They had sort of an internal locus of control. It was striking how different they were. And I recently did interviews with these women at 30, and the paramedics' children sort of took off in their lives, whereas the helicopters' children, many of them have very successful careers. They're dentists, they're lawyers, but they're still seeking their parents' approval. They still can't make a decision without a parent in their life. And it's sort of frustrating to see that in a 30-year-old. So there are sort of longer-term costs of helicopters that I emphasize in the book, and it also has long-term costs for parents. If you're a helicopter and you're sort of doing all of this intervention on the part of your child, you're going to need to keep supporting them in this way for a long time, and that's actually quite a strain on you. To be doing this as your child is heading into their 30s.
Well, and you're talking about financial success, and maybe that as a guide point or a point of a child's success or an adult's success after college. But in interviewing these people, how about happiness? Were you able to get an idea of, okay, you know, this person who had a, quote, professional helicopter parent may be as successful career-wise as this person who had a, quote, paramedic parent, but how do they feel about themselves?
Yeah, and that's sort of what I was getting at. You know, happiness is one way to define it. There are a number of ways to define sort of intangible things that are not monetary or even sort of occupational. The paramedics' children, I believe, had a better sort of they had better sense of self-efficacy. They were able to affect change in their lives, and to do it without their parents, without having to call their parents. And their parents had carefully crafted and built this all the way, actually often starting in high school and all the way through college. And by the time that they graduated, these were people that, you know, they could balance their own budgets. They could figure out what they needed to purchase. They could get their own apartments. They could, you know, make decisions about the jobs they wanted, the careers they wanted, how to form families down the line. They could go to their parents if they needed support, but their parents had instilled in them the notion that you can make these decisions by yourself. You are a good decision maker. You know how to reach out for support and help when you need it, but you're capable. You can do this. And so there is a way in which I think that can kind of translate into happiness, which is sort of a hard category to define, but a sense of being able to move through your world on your own and to be able to accomplish that. The helicopters, professional helicopters children, super successful on lots of financial and job counts. They were, you know, their parents made sure that they didn't mess up and that they reached, you know, they went to graduate school, they had become lawyers, they had become dentists, they had successful professional careers. But for some of those kids, what was missing was this sort of self-efficacy piece, which is, you know, by the time that you're 25 to 30 becomes kind of crucial. You need to sort of have that in place.
We're talking about different parenting styles and their impact on college success, success after college this hour. You are welcome to join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. And Tom is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Tom.
Hi there.
Hi. What would you like to add to the conversation?
Well, I'm speaking from about three points of view. One is a parent who's a child trans. We moved here about 4 years ago, and our child came up here to go to school at University of Iowa. And I taught a college English for 20 years or so, 25 years, and I also advised. And I felt like I did a pretty good job at the advising part of it. What I've seen lacking is any real commitment on the part of universities, especially public ones, now they don't have any money, and we get what we pay for. I'll just give you one anecdote to illustrate this. My son didn't have a language requirement where he was, and he took French and struggled. I mean, and he ended up surprisingly getting a B. But the reason why he struggled so much was this was French 2. He had never had French 1, and the advisor signed off on his advisement for him to take that. And it was, I mean, that's just one anecdote in terms of, and those teachers, I'm sorry, those advisors, at least my experience has been that advisors past a certain point are within the department which they're studying in, the students are studying in, and they don't necessarily receive any compensation for it. You know, they've got personalized, they've got research, and they've got planning and grading and teaching. And I think my point in this particular rant is that you got to pay for it. And if you don't pay for it, you're going to get what you deserve.
All right. So you feel like universities are not investing in this kind of support enough?
Well, I think taxpayers are not investing.
Okay. Tom, thank you so much for your input on that. And we have a tweet which asks an interesting question. You guys are talking about moms. What about dads? What about dads who helicopter? And, of course, Laura, in your research, you were focusing on women who were college students. So I think in that case you might see moms more involved. But overall, what was your observation about moms and dads and this helicopter parenting phenomenon?
It's a great question. I interviewed both mothers and fathers, and I found, at least in my research, and you're right, I interviewed parents of women, that mothers were the ones that did the vast majority of helicoptering. In fact, the fathers often sort of said, you know, she's such a buttonski. She does all of that stuff. And, you know, I couldn't, you know, I want to be involved, but I don't want to be involved at that level. So I kind of let her do that thing. The interesting thing was paramedic parents, fathers and mothers went hand in hand. They were both involved. They were both the supports for their children. There wasn't sort of this gender division of labor that I saw with the helicopter parenting. Daughters of paramedic fathers were just as involved or just as connected with their fathers as they were with their mothers. And there was definitely a very similar sort of approach between mothers and fathers in terms of how to deal with their kids when they were paramedics. But for the helicopters, it was primarily the women doing the heavy lifting, which is consistent with a great deal of research on intensive parenting that suggests that women are the ones that both feel the pressure to be the most involved in their children's lives and also are judged most by the success of their children. And so, you know, these women were doing a lot of labor on behalf of their children and were likely to continue doing that labor for another decade or so. It would be interesting to see if fathers and helicopter fathers would do more with their sons. But some of these parents also had boys who were in college, and the mothers were still the primary helicopters for their sons.
Interesting. And Mira, in your interactions with parents, I mean, you are there to give them the information that they mm-hmm. need and help them understand what's going on with their child, give them the resources that they can also share with mm-hmm. their child. Do you find yourself in a situation where you end up having to also give advice on the best way to approach some of these problems?
I think quite often, especially by the time a parent does come to our office or does call our office or visits our office, there has been a crisis or they are upset. And understandably so, their child has transitioned to the University of Iowa and has had some sort of concern to the point where the parent has now outreached to us or to any other office and it's reached us, however that may happen. So there are concerns there, and how do we – I think what we talk a lot about is there's always a solution, there's always options for what we can do for your student. And I think what also helps parents and families is for them to know that we are partners in their student's success, but at the same time, we want to actively work to do what is ever in the best interest of that student. And if that's staying at the University of Iowa and using different resources, that's great. Sometimes we'll work with parents and families, and there may be a health concern where we talk about to what degree is this going to have a negative impact on the student semester if they remain enrolled, and would it be in the best interest of the student to withdraw the semester, go seek care, and then come back at a point when they can really be successful and reach their goals, take care of themselves first. So that conversation, they're difficult conversations to have, especially by the time the parents will call our office if they're upset. But I think just knowing that they have somebody at the university, and maybe that's part of the reason why our office was created, and other offices as well across campus have really, really stepped up efforts to help all students.
Let's go back to the phones. Catherine's on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Catherine.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I had two separate questions. One was related to the research. I was curious if they found any sort of different parenting styles required more for boys than for girls. And then my follow-up question would be, I have two children who are in high school, a boy and a girl, and my daughter is self-sufficient. She's an excellent decision maker, so I'm not worried at all about her going into college and being successful and feel more comfortable, obviously, in the paramedic role with her. My son, on the other hand, is maybe not quite as far along or as mature in his decision-making, and I do worry about having to helicopter. And I don't want to. I want to be able to be a paramedic for him. Like, is there any advice that you would give to how to transition and kind of keep pushing him in that direction of being a better decision maker and kind of being more autonomous so that we can just be paramedics?
Well, Catherine, thank you so much for your call. And so the first question, I mean, Laura, you focused your research on women. So do you have an observation of that, a difference between how people approach that with college women or college men?
So because I don't have men in my sample, I can't actually definitively answer that question. I can say, though, that research suggests in general that parents are more involved with their daughters. So I suspect that in many ways, helicoptering a son may look a little different. The pattern that she notes, however, of women being sort of better, her daughter being a better sort of decision maker at this point than her son, I think is actually not uncommon, though. So I would be curious to see what research would find, because that's sort of two counterbalances. One, women often get sort of more parental involvement. Two, sons at this age might need more. So I don't know exactly what that amounts to. But I would say on the second question of how to ensure that you could be a paramedic for your child as they are in college, this is the parents who were successful at being paramedics started much earlier. They were doing this already, in many cases, even in middle school with their kids, and they built up. So it was definitely a gradual increase. Parents that tried to be paramedics that sort of dropped they made a change the second their kids got to school, their kids were like, what happened? I had a helicopter, now I have a paramedic. What happened? And it didn't go very well. And then, part of this, too, is being attuned to how your own child's abilities. So the child that might need a little bit more assistance, you may have to be a little bit more involved with a paramedic for a little bit longer than maybe for the daughter. Parents who are, like this caller, very attuned to their children's needs were, in general, sort of more successful at parenting because they did modify things a little bit to make sure that they could accommodate what their child's personality is and what their abilities were at that stage.
Well, and I'm sure a lot of parents ask you for advice. And we heard in the beginning the voices of parents. Parents are always second-guessing themselves. There isn't a manual for how to do this and how to get it right. So if you had one piece of advice, Laura, for parents, what would it be?
So after all of this research, and I have to say I have two young daughters, so I have been thinking about this question. The advice I would suggest is to really sort of try to approach things like a paramedic. Offer support when your child needs it, if you are at all capable of offering support. And if you have limited resources, it is possible to do this to save your time, investment, money for those moments where there is a real crisis. And parents, a lot of working class and lower middle class parents were capable of doing this. They managed to sort of rein in what they had and step in when they could. And for parents that have a lot of money, resources, time, I would say hold back a little bit. Give your children some space to make a few mistakes. Be there when they need you in a crisis. But allow children to learn on their own to some degree.
Laura, thank you so much. Laura Hamilton's the author of Parenting to a Degree, How Family Matters for College Women's Success. Mira Anson, thank you. She's Director of Academic Support and Retention at the University of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa.